This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. We've been doing business in the neighborhood of about 20, you know, plus years. In fact, recently I just got done doing a biography for myself, I guess, for some guys who were building a website, and they wanted some information, and so last night I was up late, for those of you who can't spell, that's late, and kind of doing a little, let's call it a biography. So we were working on a biography late last night. I was sitting here trying to figure out if I could find it. And heck, no, why would I be able to? That would just be too darn easy if I could find it. So anyway, I guess I won't be able to go over that for you. Gosh darn it. Golly, how about that? Golly gee whiz. Not working out so well. So anyway, it kind of went over my whole background and touched on some different things and just showed what makes Coins Plus unique. Coins Plus, folks, I'll tell you straight up, and obviously I'm biased, right? But in all honesty, we are different. Not just different. We're different. But we're different as far as the fact that I would consider us much more professional, a lot more serious, a lot more knowledgeable, just a lot more experienced in the overall industry. We're well balanced. I was talking just the other day to a gentleman who bought a substantial amount of a certain date. We'd bought an original roll of 1934 S Peace dollars, 34 S in mint state in Peace dollars. That's a year before the last Peace dollar was made. 1934 S means San Francisco. In mint state, especially high mint state, in other words, uncirculated, they are hands down the rarest Peace dollar, bar none, unquestionably. When you get way up in the high grades, there's a few that are more rare, primarily because they didn't use as good a quality control standards. And those, of course, are in the mid-20s with mint marks. And those of you who don't know or don't care about coins, I'll give you some information anyway. In general, what we would call modern 20th century coins, the rarest coins, hands down bar none, are 1920s dated with mint marks, okay? So that means coins dated between 20 and, say, 26, 27. The second rarest is, well, it's all over the board. But in general, I mean, obviously 1800s with mint marks. Mint marks are branch mints, okay? If a coin, older coins have no mint mark, it means they're from the Philadelphia Mint, okay? That was the mint. And then what would happen is the Philadelphia Mint would create secondary dies, and they would ship those dies off to what we call the branch mints. The branch mints in general were like New Orleans, San Francisco, and then Denver. Different proportions of coins were minted at each. a few of the really extraordinary rare ones was the Charlotte, Carson City, and Dahlonega Mints. They were all open for a short period of time. They made coins in low, low quantities. They were meeting needs in small geographic areas. And so, in general, when you're looking at coins, which, you know, you're not going to be an overnight expert, trust me. One, I guess I'll go as far as saying problem that we run into is that people will literally go on the internet. I mean, you think if you had any clue on the quantity of coins that exist out there, it would blow your mind. And people go on Google or whatever it is, and they do research on investing in gold and silver. The problem with that is you are going to get, first of all, every single thing on, how about that? Google is paid to play. Pay to play. It's all paid advertising. Okay? Secondly, companies are going to sell you, in general, coins that are easy to get. Why? Because they have commission salespeople, and those commission salespeople are 95% of them are not numismatists. Now, you could call there. Now, I don't know how many of you are out there who have gotten on these lists. There's a number of ways to get on coin lists. One is Parade Magazine, Littleton Coin, or other companies. They will literally sell you like 3 Sacagawea dollars. Okay. Now, what's the face value of a Sacagawea dollar? A dollar. Okay. So 3 of them, what's the face value? What's the total spendable value? $3. Okay. So they will advertise to sell you 3 Sacagawea silver dollars. So you got $3. And they'll advertise to sell them to you for $2.95. Oh my gosh, I'm saving a nickel. Okay, and then shipping's not free. Oh no, of course not. And then you'll pay exorbitant shipping and whatnot. But folks, they are fishing. They are probing. They are finding out a lot about you. It's a psychological profile test. So what they're doing is they're saying, okay, first of all, this person doesn't calculate the shipping into the cost. Secondly, these people like coins. Third, they don't understand that Sacagawea dollars are junk. Excuse my, slang term, but they are. They're, as far as a collector term. Now, money's never junk. That's the nice thing about collecting what we sell. If you buy old U.S. silver coinage, you are buying money. So if you come in and you say, I want $500 worth of silver, and you want the old U.S. silver coinage, which is 90% silver, some people freak out about that. Oh my gosh, it's not pure silver. How could I dare own something that's not pure silver? Well, first of all, you are only going to buy the silver that's in the coin, okay? Do not get confused or lost and think that you're paying the total weight of the coin, including the copper and nickel alloy. You are not. You are just buying the silver. The number one gold coins for sale in the world are the American Gold Eagle. The American Gold Eagle is is not pure gold. It is, however, if it says 1 ounce, if you buy a 1 ounce American Gold Eagle, you get an ounce of gold plus 10% silver to alloy. So it will be alloyed or hardened with an additional 10% silver. Okay? So if you buy a 1 ounce American Gold Eagle, and you put it on a scale, it's going to weigh 1.1 ounces, okay? That's because there's an additional 10% alloy to harden the metal. It's important to understand that gold in and of itself in a pure form is not viable. It can't endure or withstand any impact virtually whatsoever. People watch old movies and they test gold by biting into it. You know, I suppose, but you know, you can't. It's harder than that, okay? It's harder than that. You can't just, you know, bite into it like a bar of butter. It's tough, you know, but it will not endure abrasions or contact, and which is why the Canadian maple leaf, okay, people who come in and demand pure gold or pure silver are usually very unknowledgeable, okay? And what I mean by that is that their reasoning is it's not sensible. They're saying, but I want pure silver. And they can't tell you why. Why do you want pure silver? Well, because that's what I read on the internet. Okay, well, if you're buying old U.S. silver coinage, first of all, let me ask you this. You know, I don't know which direction we walk on this, okay? Would you rather have, and I'm not saying you can have it, but let's just be hypothetical. Would you rather have 10 ounces of silver in the form of old silver dollars or 10 ounces of silver in the form of brand new struck 1 ounce American gold or American silver eagles? I'm sorry, I said gold. Okay, so you have the choice. The U.S. Mint has made a number of different silver dollars. The most popular silver dollar in the world is hands down, like I always say, bar none, the Morgan silver dollar. Okay, the Morgan silver dollar is the king of kings when it comes to precious metals, or when it comes to collectability, numismatic value, whatever you want to call it, whatever you want to say. Okay, the 1 ounce Morgan, well, not the one. The Morgan silver dollar is the way to go. It's what you want, okay? It's the way you want to go. If you're into buying silver, why? Are you going to pay a premium? Yep, you sure are. What's a premium? A premium means you're going to be paying more than the silver that's in the coin. Well, people are like, well, I don't want that. I want something that's not collectible at all. Well, folks, right now, the premium on those is the lowest it's ever been in the 25 years I've been in this business. Premium meaning the amount, percentage of cost you pay over the content or intrinsic value of the coin. I know for a fact the premium on Morgan silver dollars is the lowest, and the old U.S. $20 gold pieces, St. Gaudens and Liberties and whatnot. It is the lowest it has been since they released them for collectability, whatever you want. Okay, so what I mean, they've always circulated. You can always spend a $20 gold piece for $20. If you do, you're a fool, but you have every right to do so. Why are you a fool? Because the gold is a full ounce of gold basically in there. Plus, in addition to it, over and above it, as we just discussed, is an alloy. It's a premium product. There's additional metal in the coin. I hope this is making sense to you and you understand it. The bottom line is, if you are buying silver or gold, okay, you want, well, I'm not going to tell you what you want. I'm going to tell you what I want. Me, personally, as a collector, as an investor, as a holder of metals, with access to everything possible for the most part. I mean, there are items that are next to impossible to get. There are items that are just too darn expensive, etc., and so on, okay? That happens. But in general, the cost of, well, the accessibility, I should say, of the vast, vast majority of these items exists. When you get a little crazier, you get into items that become very difficult to find, okay? This is where you will not, okay? If you call Goldline, Roslyn Capital, Swiss America, Raricoa, all these companies, you got one of two choices. You either take what they pitch you, okay, which is based on their sales meeting for the morning. It's based on commission. It's based on the fact that they say to them, hey, if you sell these today, you're going to get a really nice premium. They always tell the employees, and I know because I have been exposed to many, many, many of them, many, many, many. We've had many of them try to come work here, and we can't hire them. They don't know anything about coins. Their perspective of coins and the customer is, let's say, skewed at best. They see the customer as a vehicle by which you severely overcharge the maximum that you can get away with. Okay, that is not our philosophy at Coins Plus whatsoever. We don't think that way, act that way, talk that way. We don't do it, okay? So if you come in here with grandma's old collection, and let's just say now this, first of all, you need to understand coins are not rare. Independent of their age. Age doesn't make them more rare. If they made 100 million British farthings in 1787 and a certain amount have been destroyed through attrition, they've been dropped in the dirt and lost and worn out and remelted and whatnot. But say they made 100 million and say there's 28 million still in existence. Time doesn't change that. 20 years from now, there's still going to be 28 million in existence. Why? Because people don't throw money in the garbage. It's not like an old dresser that they made 8 of or whatever, or 18 or 58, or it doesn't matter, because coins are in no way similar to this. I hope you're following me. A coin that's rare today will be rare tomorrow. A coin that has desirability today will always have desirability. That desirability will fluctuate. Okay? It's going to fluctuate based on supply and demand and based on where the government or the financial gurus point the ball. Okay? You know, the distractive ball, where they say, look over there. Hey, look over there. You know, and they want your eye off the ball. They don't want your eye on the ball. They want you to see what they want you to see. And they're very, very good at it. So the big players on Wall Street, the real players, we'll call them, you know, their job is, well, when you get high enough on Wall Street, they don't care about the lower end at all. Because their customer, if you're a bigwig on the 47th floor of Wall Street, and you're doing these flip-flop, as we call them, investment trades, who cares who's buying it? And when you get to those levels, there's only one buyer. That buyer is another broker, okay? That's just the way it is. It's too much money. They trade literally, folks, second by second, minute by minute, and day by day, literally in the billions of dollars, okay? So they will be, you know, in 30 minutes, you know, they're looking for percentage spreads. And I know guys who are in the game. Most of them don't make it. Why? Okay. And the real reason why is if you want to be a really, really good stockbroker, and I mean good, you are going to have a slick tongue. You're going to have a very high pressure personality. You're going to be a master of deception. You're going to tell people what they want to hear, not the truth. And I'm super sorry to be telling you this, but your brokers at Edward Jones or wherever, they are trained to make you their friend. Okay? They're trained to become part of the neighborhood, to go to the basketball game, to go to the baseball game, to get involved in your children's lives. They're trained to become your rent-a-friend, okay? As long as you're investing with them, they are the nicest people. They're trained how to be nice. It didn't used to be like that in the 80s, but this is the new way. Why? Because of the internet. People become incredibly, financially sensitive. In other words, they absolutely want, people want to be wise with their money. They don't want to pay huge premiums. They're cheap sometimes. They're going to go out and look for the cheapest way to accomplish a goal, which in 90% of the time, you know, the typical 90-10 rule, 90% of the time is very sensible. You want to be wise with your money. It's a no-brainer. You want to absolutely be as wise as you possibly can with the wealth and capital and assets that God provides you with, okay? You have an obligation to do that. Biblically, you literally owe God that. God is the creator of wealth. God gives you the ability to work to earn wealth. You need to, I always say you need to understand that, but I mean that. You need to understand that, you know, what the Bible says about earning money. About, let me see this here. About the ability to work and earn money and have good stewardship so that you aren't a fool's fool. A fool's fool, believe me, has, you know, they spend every penny they make. And I know many of them, and I am related to some of them. I'm trying to check something out here. Let's see. I am the king of typos. I just had to get last night, because I have Apple Care Plus on my new iPhone XS Max, which is the big version of the one that has facial recognition and all that stuff. Yes, folks, I do have the facial recognition turned off, but it doesn't matter. It still picks it up. It knows where you are at all times, just as your car does, and just as your home does. They're starting with appliances that send signals out on satellite networks. Samsung's a classic. Every single item they make now sends information to their satellite for and about you. It tracks your behavior and so forth and so on. It's the way it is. When you get these people in here that are so determined that they want to remain off the radar, and they literally will turn around next and try to buy on a debit card or a credit card, or write a check. Folks, you're done. Now, you're done. I mean, if you really, really, really didn't want somebody to know you're buying metals, you would, you'd get the cash together, which, by the way, there's a hypothetical $10,000 cash transaction reporting law that gets, I think sometimes it gets too much attention. I mean, we've had situations with the, you know, the Spokesman Review one time where, you know, they had this wild idea in their head that we were buying stolen goods. Why? And no, folks, absolutely, without any doubt, do not let that get in your head. And I'll tell you something to keep in mind. Gossip. Even me mentioning that will ring in some of the minds of the listeners for the simple fact that people gobble up gossip. We love it. It's like Proverbs says, I read in Proverbs 18 last night. It's like dainty morsels, which to me is a really dumb name, but what it means is like candy. Okay. It's gossip is like candy. What's worse is that we can be told something that we know is false about somebody, and it will affect our thinking about that person despite the fact that we know it's not true. There has been study upon study. Folks on the Family had some psychologists on years back. I used to just be avidly listen to the radio. I can't anymore. I'm too busy to listen to the Christian radio, which is very frustrating to me. The only time I get a chance is when I drive. Otherwise, at the shop, we're just buried up to our necks continuously. And they've done studies showing that when you hear gossip about somebody that you know is not true, it just sticks, okay? So it's not good, and you've got to be very, very, just be very careful. The Bible's very, very clear about how we talk about others. I will admit that I'm far from perfect and pure. And you get into very difficult situations as an employer because you have to discuss things with people individually and as a group. Usually, the people that will lodge complaints are very green, very naive, and very unwilling to learn. They think they know all things. There's one employee in particular that I had that was just dripping with talent. And his whole thing was, well, you know, and I told him straight out, I said, if you learn my business, in other words, I want people first and foremost to learn how I think and what I think and how I respond. I run into people who get easily offended as employees. That is not customer service at all. Customer service sometimes, I mean, people can be completely unruly and out of control. I think we all know that and agree. When these people get behind the screen of a computer, they can become, you know, hostile and very abusive and destructive. And if you, you know, if you get a chance to look them in the eye and talk to them, they won't behave this way because they have to. They have personal, emotional, interactive, you know, interpersonal, whatever you want to call it, accountability to you. Or whoever the person is they're gossiping about. You'll see the same behavior behind the wheel of a car. You know, the great big, you know, one of my pet peeves, and this will make somebody angry because that's what I do. one of my pet peeves is the great big truck, you know, the monster truck with tires, you know, 36 inch tires and a 5 foot lift kit. You know, of course I'm exaggerating, but you know what I mean. These huge monster trucks, and you know, they're not really monster trucks, but you know what I mean. These great big road beasts, road hogs, whatever you want to call them. These guys in general are a lot of times extraordinarily aggressive. My wife and I were going to dinner the other night, and we were coming down the highway, and we were pulling off on an exit, and we were doing, I mean, we were, you know, going, we were out in the Sullivan area where the speed limit's like 70 miles an hour. And we were turning on Sullivan, and as we went down the interstate, I was in the middle lane doing the speed limit, and I said to my wife, oh my gosh, look at this guy coming. And I'm not kidding you. This guy in a monster truck, big beast, is literally doing 100, I would say. And I have a pretty good judge of speed because I'm into racing and, you know, race cars. And I mean, you know, I've got a pretty good judge. I say he's doing 120 to 125 miles an hour in a great big monster truck, just as reckless as you can be. And this is where police, they get trained, in my opinion, wrong and unknowledgeable. So they use the one rule applies to all. They don't understand that when I drive a sports car that I have, or a couple that are, you know, extraordinary. My first phenomenal sports car was a Corvette ZR1, which was, they started making in 09, and I think mine was a 10. And at the time, it was the fastest production car in the world. It weighed about 3,000 pounds, had 650 horse. And wow, would that thing roll. But it also stuck to the ground like glue. It was the first car to break 1.1 Gs in the slalom. What that means is it actually went to 1.19 Gs in the slalom. What that means is it took 1.19, almost 1 1/5 times the force of gravity sideways before the wheels would break away. Now, think about that. That doesn't make sense. That means the center of gravity is below the ground because of modern engineering. You should, if a car weighs 3,280 pounds, and you put 3,280 pounds against it from the side, it slides, right? But not with these modern supercars. And so I, you know, needless to say, these newer cars, what's very important is people think, when they think of high speeds, they think of the old cars that they'd slap, you know, these big Hemis in, and they'd be getting 460 horsepower. But they'd have terrible suspensions. They'd have terrible tires, number one, that would blow apart. Now they have on supercars, and a lot of you, I'm sorry if you don't care about this is my world, Z-rated P0 tires. What does that mean? Z-rated means that they can go over 135 miles an hour without blowing apart. And technically, they're rated up to, you know, some of the ones on my cars are rated up to over 200 miles an hour. People don't realize, when they always think of a tire as taking impact, they don't think about it the other way around. When you start to go really, really fast, and that tire, the RPMs on that tire, the RPM means revolution per minute, in the other words, the speed at which that tire is spinning, starts to stretch that tire out the other direction, okay? So now you've got to build, if you're building a racing tire, you've got to build it to take impact from two directions. Number one, it's got to take impact from bumps and hiccups and things in the road. Number two, it's got to be made so that it doesn't stretch out and pop the seal and give up all your air while air pressure while you're putting the hammer down. That's P0, they call it. Zero pressure. It'll run with no pressure. That's wrong. That's Z rating. Z rating is the highest speed, means it won't stretch out like a rubber band and blow off. P0 means that they'll run with zero pressure. They have baffle after baffle after baffle inside the wheel, these big, thick rubber baffles. I've seen them cutting in half. They'll be like an inch thick, and they'll cover like three-quarters of the width of the wheel of the tire inside, so that if you lose all your air pressure, you have all these great, big, thick-walled baffles. And then they'll go back and forth from side to side and whatnot. So I've actually had some P0 tires. I had one in particular a while ago. I got a flat tire on. The only way I would have known I had a flat tire is because the TPMS system, which is tire pressure monitoring system, which tells you exactly how much pressure is in each tire. The TPMS system went on major red alert, where it just absolutely started to blare out and blurt out a problem, saying, you've got a problem, you know, you need to address this immediately. Everyone knows that everyone should understand, tires are everything on a car. It'd be like taking a sprinter, the fastest sprinter in the world, and putting him in slick bottom dress shoes, and then telling him to go out and run a 100-yard dash or do a 100-yard hurdles or something. It's not going to work. You take all that power and all that speed and all that pressure and all that talent, and you can't transfer that to the ground. Tires are the same way on upper end supercars or hypercars. There you go. That's what you call a tangent. But it gives you a little bit of information on tires and speed and whatnot. So what I was going to say, police officers, highway patrolmen, they just do a one-size-fits-all. They assume that if you're going too fast in a supercar, it's dangerous. They think it's just as dangerous as everything else. Why? They hear these stories. Clear back in the 90s, mid-90s, I did about a two-year stint in 94, 95 at Appleway Motors when it was privately owned. They were selling 1,200 cars a month. I had come out here. I was with Norwest Banks, which was a large bank that actually consumed Wells Fargo, bought it. But they kept the Wells Fargo name because it was the Wells Fargo name, which was a terrific name and very well known. And went back to the 1800s. However, they kept the president of Norwest Banks, Dick Kovacevic, to run the place. And Norwest Banks was the most profitable bank in America at the time and very sizable, very, very good company. That was my first company I worked for. That's where I went through the management training program. I was the youngest manager ever promoted in that company. They put me in what they used to call a suicide branch, which is a crazy name, but it meant that the branch was going to close, had been improperly run or whatever, and it just was not performing. So they would take new managers, put them in these branches as they were closing down, get them 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, 12 months experience. And then they would have experience, not the best, but some, and then they would move them and promote them and transfer them to another branch. The mistake they made with me is they put me in charge of the youngest manager promoted in over 1,000 branches ever in the company. They put me in a branch in my old hometown. So my name was known, not that it was like, you know, Nike or something, but people knew who I was. And they, I had a lot of business success, and I really got into mergers and acquisitions. A lot of these furniture shops, even if you go to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho or whatever, companies like Runge, furniture, as far as I know, they sell low end stuff, but they will finance you in house. they will get a down payment and they'll finance you. So they'll have these big blocks of paper. They'll have these huge, you know, Rolodexes, or I don't know what their system is now. I'm sure it's computerized. This was back in the 90s. Same with self-service furniture, which was owned by Irene Heintzelman and a number of others. I was a specialist at going out and talking these people into selling me these blocks of paper. Why would we want those? Because it increased our clientele base and gave us people that already owed money on these loans and furniture, paper, per se. Most of them were very bad credit because they couldn't finance somewhere else or they didn't have a credit card. And in a lot of cases, the interest rates were just exorbitant. So we would get this paper. We would call. We called it paper. In other words, they were loans. We'd call and say, hey, we just assumed your loan. I can see a way to save you a bunch of money. We'd pull some credit on them. And I'd say, I can see a great way to save you a lot of money. I can get your interest rate way down. In some cases, I can consolidate your debt for you. And in some cases, if people had equity in their home, we would tie the loan to their home to get them the tax deductible tax write-off. Or at least a write-off on that debt. And, you know, and people were pretty receptive to that. That's one of the reasons we used to get that paper. I was very good at it. I'd taken a branch that, and I'll finish here quick. You know, I was the earliest promoted manager. The branch was supposed to shut down over the first fiscal year. I did very well. I got 2 years in a row star performer, which meant I was in the top 2% of all the branches in the nation. Did pretty well, but I ended up leaving for a company in Spokane at the time called Home Lending Associates, which was a company that did a lot of mortgages. They had a really strong history, and unfortunately, by the time I got there, they were coming apart at the seams. I couldn't get title work or appraisals or anything. They'd ruined their reputation, and I got in a bad spot. Ended up in the car business. And learned a lot about cars, but didn't like it just because of that. It was brutal hours and in a very high intensive environment, especially as a finance manager, business manager. And I went back into banking, which I loved. Over time got promoted to regional manager with Bank of America. And that's who I was. And then I got into coins. I was buying on the road. I'd work during the day. And then at night, I would come home, have dinner at the hotel. I'd get done early. I'd start early in the morning. I'd get all my accounts called on or whatever. I was responsible as a regional manager for all the accounts that had over $5 million in assets. And then I would go out and I'd buy estates. And then I got a big, you know, a very well-known name for buying estates. I'd get a lot of phone calls. And people would call and say, when are you in Yakima next? When are you in Wenatchee next? Or, hey, I'm in Othello. Can you come here? And I'd get estate attorneys and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I was just out buying, buying, buying. Now, I'll tell you, folks, don't go to the Nickel Neck or the Exchange or any of that and find yourself business. It's just those people are looking to just rip you off. They're looking for free coins. They're looking, you know, it's just not a good place to be. Coins Plus has been in business for 20 plus years for a reason. We have one of the nicest facilities in the United States for a reason. It's brick and mortar. You got to be so careful about people that have fancy websites. I have seen the best, the biggest, the most respected companies one after the next go bankrupt over the years. I've learned a very valuable lesson. And that is not to get overly impressed by the big, big, big boys because you'll eventually get burned. We've tried to hire people from some of these companies and they're just not trained the way that I want my people trained. I train my people to do what I do. I want each and every one of them to become me. I'm waiting for that employee who is going to step up to the plate and do what it takes to run the operation A to Z. You know, stand up for what's right, do the right thing. You know, sometimes it's hard. I mean, one of the hardest things of all is personnel. I hate it. I hate when I have to let somebody go because of vast disrespect. I recently had to let someone I cared about a lot go just because of blatant rebellious insubordination. They just flat told me they wouldn't do stuff, and it just got to the point where I had no choice. I had to let them go. That kind of stuff's really painful. It hurts me because I love people. One thing I love is people. I hate administrative paperwork, and I love coins. I love more than anything working with coins. I love coins. I love collections. I love, you know, I love building portfolios. I love watching people win. Right now, the price on metals and the price on coins is just tremendously aggressively fair and safe and awesome. And, you know, you got the Dow Jones and all these other indexes that are all over the board. We've got debt coming out our ears. This is the Keynesian economic system at full throttle. John Maynard Keynes, when he created it, said, this is the necessary ingredient for socialism to prevail. I don't care who you are. Socialism, Marxism, and communism are one and the same. They're different stages of the same exact phenomenon. When you impose socialism, now you've got all these lefties right now that are saying that we're a socialistic democracy. In other words, you know, we want to take all the money from everybody and share it, but we're still going to allow you to vote for, you know, for your representatives, which basically have lost complete and total control. Nobody, and I mean nobody right now, we've lost it. We've lost our constitutional everything as far as perspective on money goes. It was written into the Constitution that direct taxation, taxation on your ability to earn a buck is a sin. They said it's slavery, and I agree. Consumptive taxes make a lot more sense. Excuse me. Tariffs, excise taxes, all that stuff. Now, Trump's imposed some of this, which is good, but he's very verbal about it. He needs to be a lot more diplomatic and a lot more kind and, you know, so what? I mean, a lot of people like that. I've seen him, like in his recent rally in El Paso, Texas, give an hour and a half speech that I thought was flawless. It was phenomenal. It showed the importance of protecting our borders, you know, because these coyotes, they come in with women and you name it. I mean, they find semi-trucks where the back end's full of people dying or dead from being overheated because the people who brought them in were apprehended or chased out or whatever it may be. That's one thing. Women are sexually abused and raped, and it's a bad, bad situation. And we need to realize that when we're dealing with these kinds of people and not reward them by giving them food for, you know, fuel for the fire. We need to, we just can't reward them for rebellion. And I'll just leave it at that. As usual, time. There's a lot of stuff I'd really like to discuss. It's kind of a bummer. I mean, I start out mentioning, you know, what's the Bible say about work and stewardship, okay? Well, we have stewardship. God gives us money. He gives us the ability to earn it. And then he wants us to be strategic stewards. A stewardship means your responsibility for what you've been given, how well you take care of it. We have got, you know, so many different things to look at. You know, we need to grow our wealth. Why? Because we live in a hyperinflated society. We recently passed the point where every man, woman, and child in America owes over $1 million in debt, okay? So we've got to, as a money principle, we've got to find a way to preserve and protect our wealth and capital management, or wealth and capital preservation, whatever you want to call it. We've got to save our money in a safe, effective manner. We want to do it in a biblically God-ordained, authorized, and created method, which is a precious metals-based asset portfolio. Okay, so real inflation, the Consumer Price Index, as I've discussed time and time again, is it's the index that's used by our government to calculate and report inflation figures. And it is now, Clinton really did the damage. It was altered to become an exclusionary index, which does not take into effect what the average consumer spends 85% of their disposable income on. Okay, since 9/11 of 01, these items that have been excluded primarily by Clinton, some by Reagan and some by others, have inflated by, and I do this over and over, but it could be, you know, 10%. There's shadowstats.com, I think. Just look up shadow statistics, and he'll show you the real numbers versus the false numbers. But we have a problem, okay? And so, blah, blah. The excluded items have inflated by 10%, and your disposable income, well, your disposable debt needs, your disposable income to buy what's necessary to live is becoming less and less efficient or sufficient. And you are beginning to use debt more and more as a consumer. You may not realize that. Where it really shows is student loans. By golly, you have to have that degree. Everybody thinks you got to have that degree. No, you don't. I know some of the best entrepreneurs I've ever met never finished a college degree, which even if it was in business, I think they'd learn that they need to be very, very careful with their, you know, with their money. And so you definitely have to watch out. So the Consumer Price Index is a claimed inflation rate that is incorrect. I discussed on Friday stagflation, where the price of goods increases while interest rates decrease. I discussed monetary inflation, which is simply an increase in the money supply. And then we, of course, are engaged in the creation of money from thin air, backed by nothing. What do you think the other countries of the world have done? They've copied us. They've followed in our footsteps. So our currency is hyperinflating. We can go to war with whoever we want, whenever we want. We just print more money. We don't have a budget anymore. We just take pretty much everything everybody's applied for, slap it in there. All they got to do is go to a senator or a congressman and persuade them to put it in the bill. And these organizations are getting funded this way. And Obama used it against people in a big way. And, you know, it's not a proper heart condition. Okay, well, how about that? How about, I don't want to get too big into Obama bashing right now. Our deficit is way over $20 trillion. Our interest alone is going to soon be $5 trillion a year, okay? I remember when our deficit, since I started the radio show at the beginning of the Bush era, was less than what our debt will be in the next, or our interest payments will be in the next couple of years. Monetary inflation is the creation of money from thin air. It's institutionalized counterfeiting, okay? And as I've said, it's theft. No economy, folks. I want you to think about this. If you don't think you care, your money is being hurt every day. But no economy has ever benefited from the increasing the amount of theft in that economy. Same with the disrespect for downtown. I mean, people, it doesn't matter where they come from. They are all around. They are working hard, and they're trying their best. And, they, you know, some of these people want to please God. They, you know, that's where their heart is. I don't mind helping them. I definitely want to be part of that aspect of a person's livelihood in a big way. I've discussed our deficit. Our unfunded liabilities are now in the neighborhood of $200 trillion. Now, you start to do the math on that, and you can quickly figure out the amount of money we owe is just, it's never going to go away. It's going to bite us in the tail, how about, and it's just on its way. So, you know, we've lost since the inception of the Fed 99.5% of our spending power of our dollar. I ended up at the same place I did last week. Darn it. I really want to get forward and get you guys educated on this stuff. Bottom line, time's up. What's new? Folks, call Coins Plus 444-0044. Give us a 5-star Google review. You want a brand new, borderline uncirculated, nice quality Morgan silver dollar from the 1800s? Go give us a 5-star Google review based on some on your business experience with us. 5 stars. Call us. Prove it. You get the dollar. You want 2 of them? Do 3 reviews. And I'm talking Yahoo, Yelp, whatever. Get out there. If you're an experienced reviewer on Yelp, you'll get posted. Otherwise, they shove you down in the toilet. You people can't even see your review. It's a horrible system. So here we are. 1 more show down. Take care. God bless. I do love you. Please pray for us. Stand behind us. Take care. We'll see you soon. God bless. Bye-bye.